the fighting and the stuff, and the business side is like, why are we talking about that? Because it's news, son.
That's one thing I like about Eddie Hearn.
Yeah.
He just answers. He does answer questions. We got to give him that.
Yeah, I mean, stop, like, you know. I don't know. I don't get it, man.
I don't like. I don't get it either.
All right, let's see here. You ready?
Yep.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
All right, guys, we are live. Welcome to Ringside Reporter, and where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Joe Habib, who has a great set of glasses on. And we got a great show for you today. If you want to call and ask questions, 323-870-3857. Remember, as soon as you come in, hit the like button. Listen, whether you like it or not, just hit the like button, all right? I'm not asking to work on a coal mine. It'll help us out. You know what I mean? Speaking of helping everyone out, Habib, do you know what time it is? It is time to pay the fiddler. Habib, for weeks now, you have been gaslighting the public, telling them, telling us that the fight between Gervonta Davis and Ryan Garcia will not take place. Habib, what do you have to say for yourself now that the fight is finally official?
I have to be 100%. I have to be 100%. It's going to happen. I have to be 100% honest, though. When I saw those two press conferences, man, I am 100% all in for this fight. I'm really excited about this fight.
Right.
And as I told Steven Espinosa, I wanted to be wrong. Now, there's one thing that I am unhappy about.
Friend of the show, Steven Espinosa. You were arguing with friend of the show.
There's one thing I am very unhappy about. Right now, I'm about to do one of the most emasculating things a man of my stature and status can do, and that's stick cream on my face.
Yeah, put it on.
That is very emasculating.
Cream
for a man
pie,
to
son.
So
yeah, put it in your face. Rub it around.
This is a beautiful pie, and I apologize to all the starving people out there that I'm going to waste this food.
He's wasting it.
But
do it. Shut up and do it.
I don't want
give the people what they want.
Lois, can you make sure you edit this out when this goes live? It's posted tomorrow, please. Can you edit it out? Thank
you
so much. Oh. The glasses stuck to it.
That was a good one. That was a good one.
That's like the fucking worst thing. Oh my god,
that was a good one, man. That was a good one. I give you that. That was a good one. Eric is gaslighting you.
Oh, it looks so bad.
A whole pie.
That thing's the glass is stuck to it.
I saw him come off like
glass is stuck to it.
The money shot courtesy of Showtime Sports and my friend Steven Espinosa.
Oh, that's horrible. That's so bad.
Creamed all over his face. The pie just now dripping off of him. Now he's cleaning up.
I also love my sweatpants and everything.
What's the matter with you? Clean it up.
Lois, let the dry cleaners know.
Put the
special chemical to get this cream off.
That's right. That's what you get.
Oh, it's horrible.
Pied. Right in his face, boy. Just yep. Right on your face, son.
The worst thing ever.
That's it. Boom. That was rough.
Okay. I think I'm all set now.
I don't even know if I can look at you the same way now. I mean, jeez.
I mean,
wow, that was rough.
Try to be a good role model to all the young men listening out there. And one thing you have to do is, if you say you're going to do something and you make a bet, you got to pay your bets.
Yeah, it ain't.
I'm like,
it ain't that important, son. I mean, you really like, wow, that was tough to watch. I got to be honest, man.
Us Habibs, we're like the Lannisters from the Game of Thrones. Yeah. We always pay our bets.
Yeah, you look like it. Yeah, from the Game of Thrones, right? Wow. That was jacked up, man. I never thought I'd see the Beeb take it like that. Boy. That was just like prison style or whatever, man. That was messed
That's
up.
That's a shame.
That was cold-blooded, boy. If that doesn't make you smash the like button, I don't know what will. All right, guys? See what I do for you guys? It was like, you know, when Beeb took the pie, it was almost like me taking the pie. You know what I mean? And I do this for you people. You people out there, this is why I do what I do. Right? All right, babe. You dried up. You cleaned off. You got everything wiped off your face.
Yeah.
Look at you. You look good. You look good now.
I'm all set.
Yeah.
I recovered pretty well from that, huh?
Yeah. Don't get too close to the camera now. Just get that right off your face. Yeah, right off. End of your nose. Just get the end of your nose so you can shot it right there. There you go. All right. Perfect. All right, babe. Let's talk about it. Took his medicine. Now it's time to go. Showtime, Tim Zhu versus Tony Harrison. Beeb was on the money last night. Beeb called a 9th round stoppage before the fight happened. It wasn't like a Corey Lee thing. He actually called it before the fight happened. Tim Zhu beat Tony Harrison via 9th round TKO. With the win, Zhu now becomes the interim WBO champion, junior middleweight champ. Jermell Charlo was supposed to face Kostya Zhu last night, but of course he was injured. Funny how he didn't keep the same energy when Tony Harrison was injured. But, you know, nonetheless, Zhu looked pretty good here, man. But, you know, Beeb, I know he impressed you, but I tell you what, the one thing that stuck out at me was he just didn't look that fast. And I know Tony Harrison is faster, but I mean, he just didn't look that quick. And I think that, you know, and Tony Harrison is not really the same fighter as he was a couple of years ago, no question. I think Charlo's crazy when he said he wasn't the same fighter since he beat me. I mean, he already beat him, you know what I mean? So they split that fight, and I thought Harrison was beating Charlo in that fight, that second fight, before he got knocked out. You know, Harrison was able to give Zhu fits at times. He gave him fits with a jab at times, but I didn't have him winning a lot of rounds here. I kept trying to think about, like, Charlo in there and what the fight would look like, and I like Zhu a lot, but I don't think he's beaten Charlo. The end came in round 9, which I don't know where this referee came from. I don't know what his deal was. I've never seen anybody get hit with, like, 20-some consecutive shots, hard shots, uppercuts, clean shots. And nobody stopped it. The guy got knocked down. He gets back up, and he's still ready to go. I mean, he's still going to, like, let this thing go. And then finally end up stopping the fight. But, Beeb, what were your thoughts on Zhu, and does he beat Charlo?
I think he can. Will he?
Yeah.
It's a tough ask. I think he can. And I might pick him, and I'll tell you why. Tim Zhu is a very efficient fighter.
Yeah.
Right? And he's an excellent counterpuncher. But here's the difference when you talk about counterpunchers. Because when I use the word counterpuncher, right, most times people think that's the guy that kind of slides back, sets the trap, right? Tim Zhu is a different type of counterpuncher, right? He doesn't step back and set traps. He steps forward and actually creates traps. If you notice, has the high guard, right? He's catching your shot, paring it down, right? Now, a lot of times, you know, a guy will slip a shot, right? Or a guy will just kind of catch it, and his opponent will just pull his arm back. But when you parry a shot, like he's constantly parrying, he knocks shots down. And when you knock a guy's arm down, you disrupt his rhythm. and he has a hard time completing the combination. Whereas a lot of times you'll slip a punch, but the guy will still finish the combination because you're not really breaking his rhythm. Tim Tszyu, right, is great at breaking his opponent's rhythm and forcing them to reset, knocking them off balance. And that's a beautiful thing. He has exceptional timing. A lot of times we'll throw the word out there, or I throw the word out there, adaptive, reactive fighter. Tim Tszyu is that. He reads the defense, and he adapts to the defense time as it's coming at him, right? Tony was good with the jab, right? He landed it early. But as you said, I only gave him one round.
Yeah, that's all I gave him.
The question is asked and was mentioned during the telecast, why isn't he throwing the right hand? Goes back to what I say. You got a guy who's breaking your rhythm, right? Obviously, you're concerned about what's coming back because you know the guy can punch. But you're in there with a guy who's breaking your rhythm, forcing you to kind of reset completely. Whereas it's different when, you know, he's flipping or just catching. He's catching, walking forward, moving the hand down. And when you have to reset, now you have to reposition your whole stance again, right? That's what he does. I think he's quick, but I don't think he's fast. B, what's that mean? Well, I've said this before too, and I'll apply it to him. Because he is so efficient with the delivery system that he has, an old Teddy Atlas for the delivery system, right? I'll give him props for that.
Yo, son.
Because he's so efficient in the way he delivers his punches, right? He shoots them. He doesn't pull back, doesn't telegraph, doesn't torque. That adds a layer of quickness to the shots because of the way they're delivered and the precision in the delivery. And here's another thing. He has such a wide array of punches. And I'm going to say this, and this is no disrespect to his dad. His dad was a great fighter, without question,
yeah.
Right? But his dad was kind of like a pattern fighter, right? Manny Pacquiao was a pattern fighter, meaning the attack patterns are kind of repetitious, but they're so good. It's like that one, I hate to use this word, but that sometimes you can say that they're one-dimensional in the way that they're repetitious in their attack, right? But the dimension is so good that it doesn't matter. That one dimension is good, and a lot of people can't deal with that one dimension. The difference between him and his dad was basically that right-hand guy. You knew that right hand was the weapon you had to worry about. Question was, you had a time when it was coming at you, and you had to, you know, be ready for it, and you couldn't always do that. It's like I use the old analogous comparison. It's like Nolan Ryan. You know the fastball's coming, but can you get around on it?
Wow.
Tim Tszyu was like that with the fastball, with the right hand. But here's the difference. Excuse me, I meant to say Kostyuszu. Tim Tszyu has the fastball, but he also has the changeup. He also has the off-speed, right? He's dangerous with both hands. He'll catch the jab, and as he's catching, he just throws that little 45 short half hook, half uppercut. Right, and he does it like extemporaneously. There's no thinking. There's no pause. As soon as he catches, he's shooting. It's hard to really pick up on that, right? Because he's defense and offense simultaneously at the same time. So the problem Charlo's going to have is a lot of times he lays back and goes back to the ropes, right? He tries to set traps. Tim Tszyu is at his best when he has you on the ropes, because he has that wide array of punches. I said, he creates the traps. Because he's so versatile with his offense and he's going to be throwing all types of punches at you, you don't want to be on the ropes, because it's hard dealing with the guy who has that variety coming at you. Body, uppercut, right hand, short left hook, right? Charlo's probably quicker. I mean, he's quicker on his feet. We'll give him that. Maybe you can argue maybe he's quicker with his hands. But the problem with Charlo is he's wide with the shots. He loads up. Sometimes he telegraphs. When he gets a little frustrated, he starts loading up, telegraphing. And you know, we saw how Tony Harrison was shooting shots straight up the middle on him. Tim Zoo being that efficient guy, short, straight punches, you know, he may be able to get there. So because Tim Zoo's timing is so great, you know, he's that rhythm breaker. He's punching in between the combinations. He's catching and shooting. It's all about trying to time when these punches are coming out and the type of punch that's coming up. Because, again, he's not like his dad. He is not that pattern, one-dimensional type guy. And I hate using that word one-dimensional, but, I mean, you know with Tim Zoo, he's looking to set up that right hand.
Yeah.
Question is, can I avoid it? Most people couldn't. Well, with this kid, you have to worry about more than the right hand. You got to worry about, you know, his mid-range game. He's also a very, very good inside fighter. Like, he's adequate all around. His dad was more of a mid-range guy, but he is adequate from a distance, mid-range, and up close. So I'll be honest with you. I'm actually going to pick him over Jermell. I think Jermell, I think he's watching him and he's looking at him and he's saying to himself, there's nothing special about this guy. There's nothing flashy about this guy.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, what did Floyd always say? It looks different from the outside, but when you're in there, it's a whole different ballgame. I think a lot of people get that sense. A lot of fighters, I should say, get that sense once they step in there with him. So D-Style, he's in the chat. We had a conversation today, and he asked me a question, or he made a statement, and I actually agreed with him. Said, could this be the rare occasion where the son of a former world champion actually lives up to that name? Could he be as good or maybe even better than his dad? I think it's possible.
This was a big test for him last night. I mean, Tony Harrison is no schlep. I mean, Tony Harrison can fight. He's not the same fighter. I always believe that he's a step slower. I think Tim caught him a step slower. But I don't think that he caught him, like, with an empty tank, put it that way. I mean, Harrison was doing – go ahead.
No, finish your point, and I'm going to go right after.
I was going to say, Harrison, I thought, was doing good work with the jab. And then I know Maestro said, did I think the fight was competitive? No, but the jab did give him fits. I mean, look at Zoo's eye. I mean, listen, if he wasn't giving him fits, it wouldn't have, you know, he wouldn't have had a mouse under it. So, listen, he gave him fits at times. I'm not just saying, but that was really the only punch I thought that was giving him problems, you know, or that gave him problems.
I'm going to ask you a question that I think I know the answer to, but I'm going to put it out there anyways. If I was to ask you, and we were to break down this fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most of us would have said, yeah, you know, I think Tony Harrison is going to give him problems early. He'll probably end up winning some early rounds, and he'll get caught late. And he said, well, I'm going to take him into the deep waters and drown him. Son, he didn't even take you. Like, he dropped you in the deep waters right away. He didn't, like,
right at the beginning, yeah.
So the question I'm going to ask you is this. I would ask you, do you think that Tony Harrison would only win one round in this fight going into the ninth? What would you say?
I would have no, I wouldn't have believed that. I wouldn't have believed that. No, I thought he was going to win some early fights. I thought, like, going into the sixth round, I thought it should have been it. I thought it would have been probably even. You're probably looking at an even fight. And then, of course, Kostya – or not Kostya. I've called him Kostya all weekend.
I called him Kostya once tonight, too.
Right. But I think Tim, you know, at the seventh round on, was going to take control of the fight. In the second half of the fight, he was going to take control. That's not how it worked out. I think I gave Harrison the first round. I thought he was doing pretty well with the jab. I thought that Tim Zoo started a little bit slower. I thought he was just on point in that first round. Second round, third round, fourth round, and so on. I had Zoo winning that fight.
And Base in the chat, shout out to Base. He said he gave him three.
I don't hate that.
Two of the judges gave him three.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Let me just – yeah, you're right. All three judges gave him three. You're correct, Base. I misspoke. Here's the thing. I will argue this. I will say that I think the only clear round he won was round one. Now, the other two,
yeah,
it's possible you can give him two more.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They weren't decisive rounds that he won. They were nip and tuck, possibly close, right? Yeah. I only gave him one round on my card, to be fair.
And I thought Zou did more damage in the other round. That was where I was coming from, is that Zou was doing more damage, walking him down and just landing the harder shots.
So if you want to give him three rounds, right, okay, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Philly said he gave him four.
I don't hate that. It depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at that last night. I think where I came in is that he just Zou was doing more damage in that fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was just doing more damage.
I only gave him round one. I'll be honest. But again, I think
we don't
score card shame here, man. Because Eric and I have had very, you know, we've had scorecards that are very much in the minority opinion out there. Both of us have had it. So,
oh yeah,
we're not gonna say, oh, could you have? We don't do that here, bro. We don't do that here.
Yeah, Nacho had the fight 6-2 for obviously for Zou. But yeah, man. Let's see here. D-Style says that James says Harrison was Jermell's toughest fight, not Castaño. Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I think Harrison. But let me ask you this, Beeb. How much of Harrison, do you think Harrison was a step slower last night than he has been in the past?
I'll tell you this. You can argue that. Was he a step? But the way people are talking about it, it wasn't just a step. It was a country mile behind him. Like this whole thing that this was a way different Harrison that we saw in the Charlo fight.
No, I don't think he was way different. No, I don't think he was way different. I think he was a step slower. And now you can attribute that to a couple things. I mean, number one, he's older. Number two, he's in Australia. Three, the time difference. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff you can attribute this to, you know. But I just thought for whatever reason last night he was a step slower than he has been.
And that's fine if you want. I can't argue that. But the way it's being presented, like Charlo said something last night, like I ruined him. He's never been the same after me.
Charlo's crazy, yeah.
Here's the problem with that statement, Charlo. You weren't the only guy to knock him out. Like the guy has been knocked out a few times. So once again, you continue to chip away at that chandelier and put cracks in it, it's going to shatter eventually, right? So this wasn't just Charlo. This was a culmination of things all at once. I mean, he's been in some tough fights and taken some damage. He got knocked out by Jared Herd. He's been knocked out by Willie Nelson. He's been knocked out by Charlo. Now he's been knocked out by Zou, right? So, yeah, but again, I don't want to take away from Tim Zou's victory. No one's ever beat Tony Harrison like that. And is he older? Yeah, he's 32 years old. People are talking about him like he's 42. And again, I mean, obviously, he's been knocked out a bit. He's been hit with some big shots. And the thing is when he's knocked out, it's not like a one-hitter quitter type knockout. The guys are beating on him, and his head, it's scary when you see him when he's in trouble. Like just like last night, his head's like, boom. Like some guys, if you hit them, boom, they go down. His head goes like this, like looks like a bobblehead. Those are the types of shots where you see that brain stem get detached from the brain, like a little jar. Those are the scary shots. See what I'm saying? So, yeah. So
I tell you what, man, that shot, those last 20,000 shots that he hit unanswered, why that ref was not in there, why they didn't stop that fight, why he didn't get in there, because I tell you, man, those are dangerous shots that he was getting hit with because he was defenseless on there. He was defenseless, man. And he got hit with those a couple of those uppercuts. They were huge uppercuts. And, I mean, he was getting smashed. And, you know, listen, man, that referee definitely should have stepped in sooner. For sure. Yeah. So it sounds like the Charlo and Zou fight is going to happen next. And I hope it does. I hope it does, man. And I like Tim Zou a lot. I don't know if he's going to make it past Charlo. I think Charlo is a little bit more athletic. I think Charlo has a better jab. He has a good jab. I don't know if it's as good as Tony Harrison, but it's pretty good. And I wonder, you know, we talk about Charlo coming in with wide shots and everything. I think, this is what I think. I think James, Derek James, or what, not Derek, is it Derek James? Derek James.
That's correct.
Right?
You got it.
Derek James is going to map out a game plan, and this is going to be one of those fights for Charlo that they have to stick with the game plan throughout the fight. Nothing crazy, nothing, you know, you're going to stick to that game plan throughout, and it's going to be very disciplined game plan, and that's how they're going to beat him. That's what I think. I would love to see Tim Zhu win that fight, don't get me wrong. I just think that Charlo is going to be a little bit more athletic, a little bit more fluid. I think Tim Zhu is going to walk him down, but I think the power of Charlo is going to be the difference, and I think the jab of Charlo could be a big difference.
The one argument one could make is, yeah, Tim's used to walking guys down, but will he still be able to come forward if Charlo lands a big right hand? Because Charlo's got a heavy right hand. We can't discount that. So
no, it's going to be a good fight, though. I think it's going to be a better fight than a lot of people think. You know, I really do. I think people think that Charlo's going to walk over him, but listen, man, you know, I think that that's a great argument that D-Style brought. Was it D-Style that brought that up earlier about Charlo, or not, about Zhu being better than his father, or just as good as?
Yeah, I never thought of it, but that's why after the fight he said, "What's my effing name?" Right? Because he wants people to know that, hey, this isn't just you know, me being the son of a great fighter. This isn't
right.
This isn't a Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. redo. This is the real thing here.
I can't think of a fighter who, and maybe you can think of one right off the cuff, but I can't think of any son who fought that was better than the
like
father coming up.
No disrespect to Floyd Mayweather Sr., but he wasn't a champion. You know what I mean?
No, he wasn't. You know. D-Style, thank you so much. He said, Jermell will lose, and people will say Jermell wasn't the same anymore. Jermell is great at a rematch. No rematch clause this time. There you go. I would love to see Tim Zhu win. I really would. I mean, just for history. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, man, like, look, I remember watching Kostya fight, like main events and stuff like that. I remember following his career from the start to finish, you know. And now we're watching his son, like, man, dude, we're getting old. You know, that was my first reaction to it. It's like, oh, my God, you know.
He's great.
He was unbelievable. Fighter. Unbelievable. I remember when he fought Chavez in Arizona, man. That was one of Chavez's last fights. One of them, anyway.
I thought Judah was going to beat him, bro. I was a little surprised.
I thought Judah was going to run over him. Yeah, I thought Judah was definitely beating that guy.
I love Judah as a fighter. Judah's an exceptionally talented
Judah's
fighter,
a
man.
Very good fighter.
Yeah, he's really good.
You know, D-Style, thank you so much. He said, Jermell is a great fighter in rematches. Too bad there will be no rematch this time. There you go. All right, let's move on here. ESPN Plus. Now, I didn't catch this fight. Carlos Takam versus Tony Yoka. Carlos Takam scores an upset win over Tony Yoka. Scores were 96-94 twice for Takam, 96-94 for Yoka. Split decision. Yoka is a super heavyweight, was a super heavyweight gold medalist. 11 fights and now 2 straight losses. That ain't good, man. I would love to ask the management why Yoka was fighting the guy. You know, he's got, like, what, 12 fights? And he was fighting the guy with 47 fights. A guy that's notorious for being a tough style to beat, a style that makes anyone who fights him look bad. I mean, Takam is that guy. Takam is not going to lay down. He's got a tough, rugged style. He's got a very defensive style. He makes people look bad. Bede, what were your thoughts on this?
It's funny, Yoka just, I hate saying this, but when you watch him in the ring, you ask yourself, when you hear that he was a gold medalist, you ask yourself, wow, it just doesn't match up. You know, he's supposedly a very good amateur, but he just doesn't have anything that jumps out at me. You know, when you look at somebody, you say, well, he can do this well, he can do that well. You try to find spots where you can say there's potential. And when someone says the word gold medalist and then, you know, they transition into a pro, it just doesn't measure up. He just looks a very lethargic in there. Like there's no sense of urgency. A lot of his punches, they just seem like they're being pushed out there. There's not a lot of snap to them. It's almost like he's in there unsure of himself. Now, again, Carlos the Calm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
because yeah. you would think with the background, there would be some type of it just doesn't translate that way. Is what I'm trying to say. You know, Carlos da Costa is a very awkward guy. I honestly thought he gave Joshua problems, and I thought he would probably finish the fight. I thought that was a very, very questionable stoppage, right? But the way Carlos da Costa comes, he kind of lumbers in, dips, ducks in, and, you know, makes those head movements, throws those looping shots. They come out of nowhere. You know,
awkward fighter.
He's a very awkward guy.
Why would you put your guy in against that guy this early?
Yeah, he's a veteran guy.
He can fight.
Well, the perception of Takam is he's long in the tooth. You know, he's kind of like a gatekeeper. He's that type of guy that he's the barometer if you're going to go to the next level or not. And obviously, Yoka could not pass that test. But again, it's funny because Virgil Hunter was in that corner and he kept saying, you know, you got to push this guy back. You got to push this guy back. But he was the one being pushed back. He was the guy that seemed to be concerned about getting hit. He was the guy that just didn't exude confidence in there. He's a big, strong, young kid. And, you know, he's just very unsure of himself and very hesitant to facilitate his offense. And that's just my honest opinion of him.
I've never been impressed with Virgil Hunter as a trainer. The only guy he has ever led has been Andre Ward. Now, you could say, well, he's the best ever. I get that. But he has not been able to take his knowledge and his training ability and put it anywhere else, anywhere. Every single guy, you know, that he's taken over has tanked. Every one of them, with the exception of Andre Ward. I've never been impressed with him as a trainer. D Styles, thank you so much. He said gold medalists are like Heisman Trophy winners. Doesn't translate sometimes. And he's right. He's 100% right. Should Tony Yoka, let me ask you a question. Did they bring him along correctly? Or did they push him a little bit too quick?
I just don't think he lived up to his potential. Like they thought he was going to be better than what he was. His style just didn't transition well into the pros. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen guys like that. It's happened, right? May he rest in peace. May he rest in peace. Howard Davis was like that. You know, he won the that trophy called for the most the best boxer in the
Olympics.
He won that trophy, and that was with the team of Sugar Ray Leonard, I think. And the 90s, usually like the 1976 Olympics.
Yeah.
I think that was my favorite team.
Beat
right?
Aaron Pryor in the amateurs. Beat Aaron Pryor in the Olympics to get there.
Yeah.
Aaron Pryor was favorite to beat him. Yeah.
But he never turned out to be a good pro, right? Never turned out to be a good pro.
Adam Smith says Jay Prince manages Tony Yoka. Now, I did not know that. James Prince is another one that I think sometimes, you know, I don't think he really, you know, wasn't he managing Floyd for a while, early Floyd career?
He was.
Yeah. You know, so everybody thinks they can come in and manage boxing and the boxers and everything like that. It's not easy, guys. It's not easy. That's for sure. You know, a lot of, you know what, and I'll tell you what, a lot of, Larry Listen said Jerry Prince managed a award too. A lot of people come into the sport thinking they're going to take it over and thinking they know best and everything. And once they get here, you find out a lot of luck is involved. It's not just, you know, it's about, you know, your guy's coming up, all of a sudden he gets a high paid offer. The guy wants to take it because it's a lot of money, but it's against a guy you know he ain't going to beat. You know?
Well, as good as Mark Greenland was as a pro, you know, he's a 2-time welterweight champion.
Who? How's Mark Greenland?
He was arguably one of the best amateur boxers of all time.
The best. I think he was the best.
You know?
He was the best, man.
But he was not as good in the pros as he was in the amateurs.
Yeah.
So
best American anyway, put it that way. Best American.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get to the phones here, let me just go over the schedule for next week and then we're going to go right to the phones. All right. So let's see here what we got. The 16th, I believe that's Friday, Beeb. I think Jean-Pascal, this is in Quebec, Canada. Jean-Pascal versus Michael Eifert, 12 rounds. IBF, light heavyweight eliminator. I'm shocked that Pascal's still fighting.
Yeah. A couple failed PED tests too, man. Like,
yeah.
How does he keep slipping through the cracks?
Right. Speaking of failed PED test, your boy on the 18th, yeah, is fighting Jarrell Miller versus Lucas Brown, 10 rounds, and they're fighting in Dubai. That should be on the zone, but maybe ESPN Plus will carry it. March 16th, Beam, in your neck of the woods.
From Boston.
There it is. Callum Walsh versus Leonardo DiStefano Ruiz. There you go, 10 rounds, junior middleweights. Danny O'Connor versus Luis Garcia in the co-main, 8 rounds, welterweights. March 18th, Long Beach, California, DAZN. Gilberto Ramirez versus Gabe Rosado, 12 rounds, light heavyweights. Joseph Diaz Jr. versus Mercedo Gesta, 12 rounds, lightweights. And that is what the $20-some a month for DAZN is going for. Gilberto Ramirez versus Gabe Rosado. Really?
Horrible.
Really?
Horrible.
For real, right? That's, yeah. Okay. Great. Great. And that's the schedule for next week. And where is that Boston fight taking place at?
Not 100% sure. I'll have to double check.
Yeah.
I know that we, yeah. I used to go downtown, this place called the Roxy, to watch fights. I'm not 100% sure. I have to double check.
All
right. That's how scarce boxing's been around this area. We don't have many fights.
I would think you guys would have a lot more. You guys got a lot of gyms up there, right? Well, you guys got Muay Thai gyms up there, and you guys got
boxing used to be big here, but it's kind of died down. We used to have guys like Dana Rosenplant, Richie Lamontagne,
yeah.
Obviously.
A lot of guys come out of there, yeah.
Yeah, we had Johnny Ruiz was from here as well.
Yeah.
Ended up moving to Vegas.
Really good fighter.
So.
Jarrell Pharmaceutical Miller. Ringside Robert, 530. You're live.
Robert,
hello,
first
guys.
Off.
How are you?
Wow.
Oh, God. You have
Robert,
to start
first,
every week.
First off. No, but first off, I hate doing this. Because I have the utmost respect for Mrs. Herrick. I love Mrs. Herrick. She's a great person.
Yes.
The way she takes care of you and, you know, makes sure everything's all squared away at the Herrick household. But I have to say one thing that I have a bone to pick with her. Now, she made a statement last week about hormone pills.
Yes.
And I have to say this. Herrick and I are on, the 365 clean boxing program. We get drug tested every month. All right. It's part of the requirement. It's part of the requirement to work here. Now,
okay.
Let me finish. I have the floor. So, she put that information out there. I started getting, people making fun of me on social media. I'm getting a lot of these emails. Questioning if I'm doing this show clean or if I'm on PEDs doing this show.
I've even questioned.
We're not allowed to be on PEDs to do the show. So I respectfully ask that you put Mrs. Herrick on the phone.
Oh, stop.
And I want her to apologize.
What's the matter with you?
Okay.
I want
first
her
of all,
to apologize and retract that statement.
First of all, Joe, that means you're on the Conor Benn WBC program, correct?
Very, very similar, yes.
We eat a lot of eggs. That's why everything tested a little bit higher than it should be.
Okay. I couldn't resist. Anyway, let's get on to real boxing.
Can you put her on the phone just – I don't want to take this to litigation because there could be a possible defamation suit in the works here. Can you at least put her on the phone? Give her an opportunity to apologize to me.
No, I cannot.
I noticed one thing about the Herrick household. I noticed one thing about that Herrick household. There's two words that do not exist in that Herrick household. You know what they are?
Steve and Will.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The two words that don't exist in that Herrick household.
Okay,
Eric. You can snicker and laugh all you want. My reputation's at stake here. My reputation's at stake.
Good.
Steve, where is the Adonis Arena at?
Can I get on with?
I'm not sure.
You know, regular.
Sure. Yeah, where
phone calls.
I'm ashamed to say I'm not sure. Now I have to be defamed by Mrs. Eric.
He's from the area and he doesn't know where the arena is. That's wonderful.
Now you're taking another shot at me. Now you're taking another shot at me. You haven't left the house since 76. You don't even know what's around the block. And you're making fun of me.
I know it's at Boston University. That's where it is. Boston University.
Oh, okay.
That's why he knows. You know, if they said Boston University, we'd have had it. You know what I'm saying?
Anyway, let's get on to boxing. I was very impressed with Mr. Tim Zhu last night. And I do think he will beat Charlo. I don't think Charlo – because this reminds me of – remember
you always want to copy my pick. Mrs. Herrick tells me that you've copied my picks – and you bet them on DraftKings because you copy me. I should be getting a percentage because
you keep
copying my picks.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. Eric, this reminds me of when Jeff Lacy was going to fight Joe Calzaghe. Remember Joe?
Really?
Joe Calzaghe had a fight before he fought Lacy, and Lacy was at ringside, and they asked Lacy, and after Calzaghe won his previous fight, they said, "Hey, Jeff, did you see anything that you have to worry about?" And he said, "No, it looks too easy. I'm going to have an easy time of it." And, of course, he went in there against Calzaghe and didn't win a round. He got dominated. This situation kind of reminds me of something similar. Charlo's sitting in New York City. And that's another thing I want to talk to you guys about. He's sitting in New York City watching it on a monitor, and this looks easy. You know, I'll be able to beat him with no problem. We're talking about Showtime Sports. Why the hell can't they send a crew to Sydney, Australia to cover the damn fight? Why do we have to put up with broken video and have people in New York City calling a fight? Give me a break.
What does it matter, though? I mean, honestly, what's it matter?
If you're going to cover a fight, you send people to the
fight. Why does it matter?
Why does it matter, though? Because you're getting better angles. I'll tell you what. You're getting better angles on TV watching it in studio than you are going to be there.
Oh, give me
argument. Listen, I can make the argument that if you're remote, you get better commentary remotely because of the different angles you get. Now, I know they're sitting there in front and they got those little monitors and they're watching it, but they're also watching the fight as well. You don't have the same type of, you know, it's not the same type of view. If you're watching on TV versus being at the arena, it's a better experience at the arena, but your view is better on television.
Well,
I
agree you get a better view on TV, Eric, but... But ever since COVID, networks are pulling this. Oh, we don't have to send people there.
They're running out of money too. I think everybody's playing it. Well, I think that COVID did a lot of things, and it taught a lot of people like that you can do more with less, or you can do just as much with less. Like it doesn't matter. We don't need to send a crew down there if there's a crew already down there. They're showing the fight. They're broadcasting the fight. Let's just tap into it, and we can do our little spiel.
Robbie, you made a good point.
Okay.
Because when they did the Davis Garcia press conference in L.A., they had those guys in the studio in New York talking about it. While when they had it the first one in New York, they were there, but they didn't fly them guys out to California.
Right.
So Eric may be right here. It looks like they are trying to save some money.
Yeah, I think it's a
little
money thing, especially when it's not really necessary. Look at Andre Ward. Andre Ward calls the fights. He's never there. They got him on top. He's always at home.
I don't agree with that either. I think if you're going to get paid,
why do you think it takes away from the broadcast?
Robbie, let me ask you this: What lacks in their analysis? Like Eric and I come on here every week and we watch the fights.
Yeah. Right.
And we're pretty spot on with we're not missing anything.
I would say we're
see everything.
Spot on, B, but I'm just kind of
you are, but you're also not getting paid by the network to cover a fight.
Oh.
You know, if you're
you worked here before. You know we.
Don't dismiss the income that we make here, Robbie. Give me a break. I mean, hell, if I was getting paid by a network, I'd want to be at the fight.
Robbie. Yeah, but what is it? I don't understand. Like, I don't understand your point as far as, like, what does it matter whether they're actually there or not? It didn't impede on the calling of the fight at all, I didn't think.
Robbie's an elitist. He likes to shame people. Like, he thinks, like, people got millions of dollars. They can just fly everywhere around the world. Like, who are you, Robbie, that you're going to make judgment on people like that?
I don't know. Call me old-fashioned if you want, but I believe if you're going to call a fight, you need to be at the arena.
I mean, when Ali fought Foreman, they did fly people out there to be.
That's correct.
Like a lot of press.
That was in 1970.
Well, if you can do it in 1970, you can do it in 2023.
Like, there's no need.
All right, you know how Robbie's nostalgic. You know, Eric.
Well, Robbie, I remember Robbie made that comment. I remember this, Robert. You said you actually like pay-per-view because then it feels like a big fight. You don't want pay-per-view to go away.
I'd love pay-per-view to go away.
I don't like pain.
I don't like the way the pay-per-view industry charges people for fights. I don't think they're worth a lot of the prices that they charge. But I do think pay-per-view is here to stay. And unfortunately, I don't see any price adjustments anytime soon.
That's not what I'm asking, though. Your comment was you would rather have pay-per-view than not have pay-per-view.
You said you liked pay-per-view better than having a DAZN membership 2 years ago.
The way I look at pay-per-view, guys, if it guarantees that two guys are going to fight, then yeah, we're going to need pay-per-view.
So what do you think of the real quick, Tank Davis and Ryan Garcia? What do you think?
I'm picking Ryan all day long. I think Ryan is going to beat Tank.
Always copies my picks, Eric. He heard me pick Ryan.
He wants to pick Ryan. I'm surprised you picked Ryan, but yeah.
I think Ryan
not you,
is
I'm Steve.
Yeah. I think Ryan is going to beat Tank. I think that size and his reach is going to make a big, big difference in that fight.
There you go.
I think Ryan's going to win, too.
Wow.
And listen to this, Robbie. I even think it's going to go. The people think it's going to end in a knockout. I think Ryan outboxes him and wins the decision.
I think it's possible either one win. But.
I'm going to be honest with you.
The only problem I see with that, Beeb, is Tank's in Vegas, and Tank is going to be considered the hometown fighter. I'm worried about him getting a hometown.
Not necessarily, Robbie. You saw in Vegas and California are very close.
Right.
That's Ryan's territory. Tank
that's
is an
correct.
East Coast guy, bro. You can argue the A side factor may play in, but here's the thing: when you got all those people at the at T-Mobile who are probably making the drive from Cali, they're all Ryan fans. They're screaming
that's
and
correct.
Yelling. That could sway judges as well, Robbie. So don't be too quick to say that Tank may get the favorable benefit of the doubt here.
Well, and we have a real good fight coming up in a couple of weeks, guys, with Benavidez and Plant. So don't forget about that one either.
I love that fight.
All right, Robbie, we're going to get
rolling.
All right,
see you later.
Let's go to
Mrs.
Call
Herrick on? You want to put Mrs. Herrick on before you go?
Stop it. What's the matter with you?
I don't know how to apologize, Zach.
716, you're live. Then again, maybe you're not.
Oh, I think he's coming.
Hello? 716. All right, no dice here.
Maybe just trying to listen.
Go to New York, 917.
Eric and Joe, good evening, guys. It's Maestro. How's everybody doing?
Maestro.
Thanks for a great show, by the way.
What's up, Maestro? How you doing, brother?
No, I'm good. I mean, look, my issue with Showtime isn't the same issue that Robbie had. My issue with Showtime wasn't that Brian Custer wasn't at the arena. I mean, my issue with Showtime is that Brian Custer was telling us that Tank Davis is a five-belt, three-weight division world champion while an undercard was taking place. So, I mean, I don't know why they needed to do that. I mean, and then they joined the co-feature fight, which seemed to be pretty interesting. I believe they joined it halfway through the sixth round, if memory serves me well. So I just don't understand
just
that. Like,
I think, you know what I think? I think that they mismanaged time over there, because whenever you go to like a different continent and stuff like that, time's always messed up. And especially because it was a one-off. They were going to show that fight, and that's pretty much it. So that fight ran longer. The cards always run longer, just like they do in England. And I think that rather than talk for another 45 minutes, we might as well show you some action. Let's bring it in. I thought it was actually a pretty good move versus letting them talk about, you know, hyping the fight and hyping the Tank Davis fight. Like, we got fights on now. Let's go ahead and watch them.
No, I mean, it was a good move. I just don't understand why they waited six rounds to do it. Like, they should have just done it right away. Show us the co-feature. Show us the main event. I mean,
I don't think they were planning on doing it. You know, I just don't think they were planning on it. I don't know for a fact, but it looked to me like it was an on-the-fly type of move.
I expect more, to be honest. And I found it very ironic that during a card in Australia, they're telling us that Tank Davis is the lightweight world champion. I mean, he's not the lightweight world champion. Devin Haney's the lightweight world champion. Devin Haney went to Australia twice, where Tim Zhu was actually fighting. So, I mean, they really need to stop the cast. I mean, I don't think anybody that's watching that fight cares about the belts. It reminds me of, you know, people that buy, like, used three series BMWs and stick the M tag on it to make you think it's an M3. I mean, anyone who knows what an M3 is knows that 318 Ti is not an M3, you know. And anybody that you're impressing with the little M3 tag doesn't even know what an M3 is, because if they did, they wouldn't think that was an M3. So that's a little analogy there for my car guys that are in the chat and listening. So look, I would have rather just seen the cold feature myself, but to your point earlier about gold medalists. I actually think it's the minority of gold medalists. I mean, somebody maybe has to run the stats on this, but I think it's a minority of Olympic gold medalists that actually have successful, like, world championship pro careers. I mean, just off the top of my head, I mean, you know, I mean, Felix Diaz.
You could be right.
Huh? Felix Diaz was Olympic gold medalist. He got washed right in front of me at the Garden by Terrence Crawford, who didn't even go to the Olympics. You know, Audley Harrison got washed by David Hay. I mean, and a bunch of other people. You know, he was an Olympic gold medalist. But you guys also got to understand, when it comes to Yoka, I challenge anybody to watch the Yoka-Joyce fight in Rio, the final, and honestly tell me that Joe Joyce did not win that fight. Joe Joyce should be an Olympic gold medalist. You know, I'm talking obviously about the juggernaut, the second best heavyweight in the world, arguably behind Tyson Fury.
Next to Jared Anderson?
I mean, pardon me? The Jared Anderson,
next
right?
To Jared Anderson.
Oh, by the way, Jared Anderson, by the way, Jared Anderson managed by the same manager you were talking about earlier, James Prince.
James Prince? Yeah.
Just to let you know. So I thought Joe Joyce won that fight. I thought he won that fight clearly. He didn't get the W, but it is what it is. In terms of what you guys were saying about Tim Zhu, you know, people look at him and they think he's basic. right? They think he's just a stand-up kind of fighter that is kind of not that multidimensional, but he actually is. And it reminds me, I'm not saying that he fights like Vernon Forrest, but it reminds me a lot about Vernon Forrest ahead of the fight with Shane Mosley when I was a lot younger. And I was talking to people about the fact that I thought Vernon Forrest was going to win. And people were like, well, no, he's not as fast. You know, he's not as dynamic. He's not as quick. And, I mean, he beat Shane Mosley with fundamentals. You know, there's something to be said about having fundamental skills. Like Akeem Olajuwon, Tim Duncan, he's some of the best basketball players of all time. They did it with fundamentals, you know. Tim Zhu is a fundamentally sound boxer. He's got great balance. He doesn't overcommit himself. He's defensively focused. And when he misses a big shot, what you'll notice him do immediately is take a half step or a full step back, reset, and then go back on offense. He knows what he's doing in there, you know. And look, I'm going to agree with Joe, and Joe might accuse me of copying his pick. I had this pick, you know, as soon as I saw this fight. I think he's a big problem for Jermell Charlo. I think Charlo should have moved up to 160. You know, I've been talking about that with my man Nando, who's a fan of your channel and mine. I mean, especially now that Triple G's vacated his belt, not that that wouldn't have been a winnable fight for Charlo. You know, you've already done everything there is to do at 154. Beating Tim Zhu doesn't you know, solidify his career in any way. Losing to him would actually detract from it, though. So if I was managing him, I would have, after he won Undisputed, I would have told him to move up, you know. But what do you guys think?
I thought he was going to move up, but judging by what he said yesterday, I don't think he is. I don't know. Do you think he can beat Esquiva Falcao?
The top-rated guy in the IBF. Huh?
You got Carlos Adames up there, who's a PBC fighter, who's got the WBC title, right? He's going to be elevated. I think he had the interim, but I think they're going to elevate him to regular. So why not go up there and fight Carlos Adames? I think he'd beat Carlos Adames, Jermell.
Well, the thing is, the DC champion is his twin brother. I don't know if he's staying or not, but Lara's regular champ. He's about to be elevated.
His brother's saying he's moving up. And he's probably going to fight Demetrius Andre. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're trying to make that fight.
That right there is a perfect fight. That's a perfect fight.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, I mean, that's a perfect fight, Joe. It would suck for Tim Zhu, but at the end of the day, Jermell Charlo is the one that collected all the belts. If he decides to vacate and move up, that's his business. You know, I think Falcao is definitely a winnable fight for him. The top-rated guy in the IBF, now that Golovkin's vacated, you know. And realistically, how long do you see him staying at 154 after he even fights Tim Zhu?
Not long.
I don't know. Why not? I mean, if he thinks he can dominate, if he's comfortable at the weight, if he's not comfortable at the weight, that's a different animal. But if he's comfortable at that weight, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
well,
I mean, the guy, we don't really know. The guy, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, finish.
No, I was just going to say, the guy that I saw yesterday causes problems for everybody at 154. Everyone at 154 has vulnerabilities. Fundora got dropped by Lubin. Lubin's been knocked out. Charlo lost to Harrison, and I thought he lost to Brian Castaño. Brian Castaño obviously got knocked out. So it's a round robin of guys that have vulnerabilities. Tim Zhu is very well positioned in the division.
Very good. Very good. All right, Maestro, we're going to get running, man. Thank you so much for the call. If you guys can catch Maestro's show on his YouTube channel. Nando Yamas, thank you so much. He said the whole amateurs, the pros comp is crap, like expecting a Heisman winner to dominate the NFL. Hello, Baker Mayfield, Gino Toretta. Well, yes and no. I mean, don't we kind of expect that, though? I mean, who's always the first one getting picked? The Heisman Trophy winner.
Well, Maestro did make a good point. But when you go back and you look at previous gold medalists. Like you look at Sugar Ray Leonard, you look at Muhammad Ali, George Foreman.
Look at that whole 84 Olympic team.
Yeah, the whole 84 Olympic team, they all became champions. A lot of the Sphinx brothers became champions.
Yeah.
Right? So back in the day, yeah, I mean, we were so used to seeing Olympic champions transition into the pros and become world champions. But he's right. Times have changed. There's no doubt about that. But back in the day, just about every Olympic gold medalist did win a world champion. And if they didn't, it was thought of as kind of like a minority or an outlier that they did. You know,
a lot of people don't know. It's a different sport. It's a different sport. Olympic boxing, sure. Professional boxing are two different sports, man. They really are.
I agree.
214, I believe this is Dallas. 214, you're live.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is the Inevitable, D-Block.
The Inevitable.
D-City.
All right.
The Inevitable.
Stand up.
I am Inevitable.
The Inevitable.
There you go. What's up, man?
What's up, guys? I think somebody owes me some crow, man. I called 2 weeks ago, and y'all asked me the question regarding beefs, regarding where the fight was going to take, and I predicted right, T-Mobile Arena.
I already stuck a pie in my face. What else do you want? You want me to cut off an arm?
Hey, but I'm the one that gave you the answer, though. That's the problem. You see what I mean? So at the end of the day, it's all good, man. I know it's going to be a T-Mobile anyways.
Don't let him off the hook. Don't let him off the hook like that.
Nah, he ain't going to be
off the hook. We haven't stepped in yet.
Yeah, I'm surprised, guys. He hasn't said, hold on. I'm going to really see it to my – I'm really going to be convinced when I see the guys in the square circle, okay? So, but it's okay, man. You know, sometimes
I saw the two press conferences, and after seeing those two press conferences, I'm all in for this event. I'm pumped up for this event. I'm excited.
All right, that's good. You know, I wanted to get a couple of details, and that's here, a couple of questions. Regarding, I think that boxing is not what it used to be. I think the presentation is way off. I think Showtime, they still have something, but they can't compare themselves to 24/7 for HBO. I mean, HBO, when they were there, they were the top dog no matter what, you know, the way we see it. I actually miss HBO. Sometimes I'll go back on my DVDs that I still have, and I'll put on fights that I can see, you know, with Jim Lampley and everybody, all the old crew, George Foreman and everybody. It was just different. You know, HBO had a – I think that we were in our golden era with boxing with HBO, man, you know, and I think we do miss it a lot. I love how DAZN, even though a lot of people are pissed off because they went up in their prices, but when you go into DAZN, I have the app. I don't care if I got to pay extra. I mean, they got a library of boxing fights. They're really focused on boxing, which I love, compared to other, like if you get a pay-per-view from Showtime, you can only see the fight one time, and that's it. They'll take it off. You can't even, you know what I mean? You can't even keep that for yourself. So that kind of sucks. Like Showtime is really robbing people. And yeah, I think they should have had a crew in Australia, to be honest with you. You know, I think that makes a big difference. That's authentic. How do you say that? To be authentic in a boxing match, you got to have your own crew down there, especially be American. You know what I mean? To bring that extra atmosphere into the fight. You know, there's tons of people there in Australia for Tim Zoo. So I believe the caller was right. Now the pay-per-view, would I rather have pay-per-view than DAZN? I'd rather pick DAZN, to be honest with you. I know that their lineup isn't that deep this time around, and Showtime's really trying to put their effort to do something, but I would rather just not pay all these pay-per-view events. You know, I mean, they're burning our pocket and they don't care, you know? I mean, yes, Tank Davis and Ryan Garcia, that's a pay-per-view fight. You know, Caleb Plant versus Benavidez should have been on the undercard on that fight. It's not a real pay-per-view fight, being honest with you, man. The guys aren't even fighting for a real title. So, and even though Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis aren't fighting for a title either. What do y'all think about that, guys, about the whole shebang with the way we should have crews all over the world, you know, especially with networks trying to, you know, represent boxing, you know, especially American boxing. What do y'all think, guys?
That's what Robbie was saying earlier.
Yeah,
Robbie,
I understand what you're saying, but like I said, man, I don't think it's necessary, especially in this climate. I don't think they can afford it. I'll be honest. That's why it's not happening. Because I know they used to do it, but if, I mean, look, man, if they can't afford it, I'd much rather them carry the fight and do it this way than just them not carrying the fight, you know?
Let me ask you a question, guys, real quick.
It doesn't bother me.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I'm about to say, it doesn't bother me because I'm more concerned about the fight itself.
A lot of times I'll watch it with the sound down anyway.
I don't care about the commentators, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, but at the end of the day, we saw commentary and how it brought it alive, the boxing match, you know? We had great commentators back in the day from the 80s.
Hey, listen, 90s, to each his own, brother. To each his own. Don't you? I mean, if you like it, that's fine. We're not criticizing you for liking it. That's what you want.
Yeah.
Not a big
I get it. Now, I mean, I do get it, for sure.
Now, with Mike Tyson and when he lost that first time, wasn't the HBO crew there in Japan?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were there.
Yeah, they were there.
And I think Ryan Garcia also, I'm riding, like I said last time, 2 weeks ago, and now just seeing them face-to-face, guys, I really do feel the young, upcoming, real fighter, and nobody gives them credit. I really feel like Ryan Garcia is going to be there, it's just like Buster Douglas did to Mike Tyson. Two different fights, but I really do feel like Ryan Garcia.
Are you picking Ryan too?
If Barrios can do that to him, and he doesn't have quick hands or great, like I told y'all last time, I see where the vulnerabilities are for Tank Davis. You know, and Ryan Garcia has a smart coach, like I told y'all last time, Goosen. He's not going to spend all his energy, you know what I mean? He's going to be smart. He has to go in there and be smart. He has to outmaneuver him and jab him. I think he needs to jab him, to be honest with you. Get a 1-2 in there and then move around and then just, you know, when he tries to come in, hit that left hook, try to hit him with that left hook to the body or whatever. Just hit him to the body. I think that's what he needs to do, Ryan Garcia. And it doesn't matter about the weight issue. I think Golden Boy needs to help out Ryan, and Ryan could go back up to weight and balloon up, and they could pay his fees. That's what I think, guys. What do y'all think about that?
There you go. All right, man. Well, we'll answer the question, but we're going to get moving,
so much,
okay?
Guys,
absolutely. Thank you. Beeb, go ahead and answer that for me.
I think he's right. I think he's right. I think it could happen. I think that Garcia, with the size, the distance, I think he's going to present some problems. I really do.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
And Garcia, once again, he's a very underrated counterpuncher himself. He's not a bad inside fighter. I've seen him land some short body shots on the inside, drop guys, get him out of there. The Tank made a statement, said, hey, you know, your right hand is shit. I disagree with that.
I completely disagree.
I think in that Luke Campbell fight, he really tightened up that right hand and started throwing it straighter. And he hurt Luke Campbell with that right hand on several occasions, right? So, yeah.
And Nando Llamas in the chat says Joe Goosen is the perfect coach for Garcia. I completely couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and I agree wholeheartedly with that too, because if you look at Joe Goosen, he's always worked with the tall guys, and he likes working with tall guys, showing them and teaching them to fight tall, work, find the jab, and I think it's the perfect coach for Ryan.
You think like Manny Stewart or something like that when you think about Ryan, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Another guy who like
loves the tall fighters. Brian, the Boxing Brain, are you backing Tank or Garcia? I think Tank wins the fight, but listen, man, there's still a lot to go. You still got to see the weigh-ins. You still got to see. There's still a lot to see here. So, but
Tank's the favorite.
Out of my head, I got to say Tank right now.
Yeah, Tank's the favorite. A lot of people will be picking him, but
yeah. A lot of people picking Ryan, too. All right. 915 El Paso, Texas.
What's going on? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Hey,
look, I just wanted to – there's a narrative that's out here, and it's kind of bothering me just a little bit, you know. This whole Charlo's at a whole nother level, and yeah, the Harrison win was nice, but Charlo's a whole different animal, and like he's in this different stratosphere. Charlo's 1-1 against Harrison, and probably lost more rounds than Juan in both fights. Yeah. All right. So this idea that he's this whole other animal and he's another, like Tim has to go to another level is crazy to me. Now, he does have a different style. Somebody could argue his style will give Tim more problems. That's fine. That has to be your default position because you're not going to say he's going to have an easier time with him, right? So especially if you think Jermall's going to win. So I get the default position But at the end of the day, I'm going to proclaim right now, Tim Tszyu beats Jermell Charlo, right? Will he get the decision? I'm not sure, right? Because Castaño didn't get the decision, but I felt he won, right? And Harrison almost didn't get the decision. He won it the first time. Jermell is beatable, like, and that's what makes the fight very intriguing, actually. That's what makes it fun. Right? Jermell's not exactly a reigning Marvin Hagler or something, the way people are making him sound. All right? And yes, he could punch and he's knocked some guys out, but he's not exactly, like, he doesn't have that lightning one-hitter quitter the way people think he does, in my opinion. He's knocked a couple guys out, but his knockout ratio isn't that high. I think Tim has a wider array of punches. Tim has a hook, a counter hook. He's got better body attack. Okay, he's got better. While the uppercut is debatable, I think Jermell's uppercuts are slightly better, right? But he's got a right hand. Okay, they're not as good as his pops, but it's there, right? And I'm telling you, I was very confident saying he's going to stop Harrison. He won't stop Jermell, but he will win that fight. And I hope he's a big underdog. I'm going to put money in that fight. And everybody better be ready. I get he's on. Look, if Tim Tszyu was from, I don't know, Houston, Texas or something, if Tim Tszyu was from New York or from Boston or some shit like that, he was American, he'd have a lot more hype
Boston,
and a lot more people.
You know.
Right? I'm just saying. But I guess since he's from Australia, we still have a lot of dudes that they're still in denial about what they saw, and I get it. Oh, what, like, I saw Shakur Stevenson tweet out, "What's wrong with Harrison? He doesn't look well. What's wrong? He's getting beat up. That's what's wrong, right?"
Yeah.
Spence was a little quiet on fight night. He didn't have a lot to say. You know, so shout out to Spence. J-Rock, who came out and said Harrison's going to handle Tim and it won't be an upset. He didn't have anything to say himself. A lot of guys didn't have a lot to say other than there was something wrong with Harrison. What was wrong with Harrison that he ran into the wrong dude. And that's the call.
All right. Thank you so much, D-Style. Also, too, B, tell us about that round table.
Oh, yeah, the round table is we're going to have it on my channel this Thursday, and you can catch us every Thursday either on my channel or D-Style's channel, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We always have different panelists around the YouTube boxing community, around the Twitter boxing community as well. So
yeah.
Make sure you check that out. Great show. And, yeah.
It is a real good
talk.
Show. I mean, like I said, you have, you know, 5-6 people on there at a shot. You guys get the questions, and you get to hear different opinions from different guys in the YouTube boxing community, the Twitter boxing community. They kind of go, you know, they get back and forth. Sometimes the arguments get – it's very entertaining, guys. So, man,
yeah.
Make sure you watch it. It's a very good show. All right. We're going to get to the news and then go back to the phones here. So the official – obviously the official rumors are official now. Davis and Garcia – taking place at Beeb T-Mobile Arena, April 22nd. It will be on Showtime pay-per-view. Now, the other big news that came out of this whole thing was that there is a rehydration clause. Now, the fight will take place at 136 pounds, okay?
Catch weight
of 136, right. Ryan Garcia says that Tank Davis's management added the 10-pound rehydration clause last minute. After everything had already been agreed to for their April 22nd fight, Ryan is allowed to weigh no more than 146 pounds on the day of the fight. The fight, he will have to weigh in at 136. Now, this is a title. There's no title on the line for this, correct?
No, there is not no title on this.
So since there's no title on the line, then he can weigh 137. I believe they give you a pound leeway. So he can weigh 137, so I imagine his catch weight could be 147 as well. I don't know.
Much
depending on
much
what the contract says. Listen, that's all written in the contract. But typically in Vegas, if it's a non-title match, you get a pound leeway. When it's a title match, you have to be right on the nose.
Yeah, I don't know if, regardless, you know, the fight can go on. I understand that, but I think they were trying to say like there's a stiff penalty for every pound he's over.
I would imagine
there's
a pretty stiff penalty on that. Whenever they put a weight clause in there, there's usually a pretty stiff penalty that goes along with it.
And here's another thing too. Like, I brought this up when I was on Ness's show the other day. Shout out to Boxing Boys. Is this like with the Jake Paul, Haseem Rahman situation where the commission stepped in and they said, well, you know, we're going to raise this weight limit or we're not going to sanction the fight? Now, this is such a big money fight. I can't see them threatening to pull the plug on it.
Nobody's
going to
pull the plug on this fight. Yeah, they're not going to pull the plug on this fight.
I could see them maybe stepping in and saying, like, you know, what's going on here? Maybe you might want to add a couple pounds. Because from what I understood and even what Ryan had said, they're going to do that. Like, they're talking about not like a morning weigh-in, but he's going to be weighed before he enters the ring in the locker room.
No. That's not.
I don't know.
Yeah, it should be the morning of the weigh-in, just like there's a, you know, just the next morning. That's it. Because how much damage can you really do? You know what I'm saying? Like, so what if you're eating all day and then you come in at 150 versus 140? That's not a big difference. That's not, you know, how hard it is to eat that many calories anyway.
Yeah. Ryan says he normally walks into the ring at 148, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I didn't realize how much bigger Ryan Garcia was than Gervonta Davis. He's much bigger, and I'll tell you this, the fact that they put a hydration clause in there, I think that speaks volumes.
Well,
speaks volumes about how they feel about this fight.
Think about this, Eric. We talked about it earlier. You know, a lot of the Tank fans are saying, oh, well, this is just a boss move. He's just doing this to just show he's the A-side and he can tell Ryan what to do. But then Ryan said on the podium during the press conference, you know, if you're so much better than me, you're so bad and you're going to knock me out and I'm such a horrible fighter, like you say, I got no right hand, then why'd you put the catch weight, the rehydration clause in there? And Tank said out of his own mouth on that stage, because you are bigger than me and you can rehydrate up to 180. And I don't want that. He didn't say, I don't want that. I'm ad-libbing.
But basically,
you know, he out of his own mouth said that Ryan was bigger than him. And obviously by putting that in there and saying and making a point to say that you're bigger than me, that you're not happy with the size difference. You're concerned with it. That's why you put the catch weight in there. That's why you put the rehydration clause in there. So you have to ask yourself, is there some type of confidence issue going on with Tank Davis? I would say it's possible.
I'll tell you what. Yeah, I think so too. Anytime you have a fight like this, you know, when you have a weight clause in it, I think that especially, I mean, the way they've been digging at Ryan and everything like that, for them to put this clause in there, when I saw those two together, then I was like, wow, this guy is pretty big. I didn't realize he was that much bigger.
One-way rematch clause, too, for Tank and not Ryan, I mean?
Yeah, that's not a lot. That's not a big confidence builder. I also heard that Tank is going back to Las Vegas to train in the Mayweather Center, the Mayweather gym or whatever. He's going to get his training camp there versus wherever he, I guess in Baltimore is where he usually trains, but I don't know. Okay. So. So that fight is set. We've got a lot of good fights set, guys. A lot of good fights set. This is a good one, too. Tyson Fury and Usyk agree to terms for April 29th. Tyson Fury, Mike Coppinger is reporting. Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk are closing in on a deal for the Undisputed Heavyweight Championship for April 29th at London's Wembley Stadium. After both sides notified the WBA that they have agreed to terms, this is according to President Gilberto Mendoza. He told ESPN that. Fury, in an Instagram video posted on Friday, called on Ukraine's Usyk to accept 30% of the Englishman's 70% cut, so it's 70-30 split. And, that's a pretty big split. 70-30, the fact that Usyk took it.
Yeah, that means he really wants the fight.
He wants that fight, and I think he's very confident in that fight. And I tell you what, as a Fury fan, it kind of concerns me a little bit because, I'll be honest, man, I mean, 30% and you're taking that fight, I mean, listen, he's not worried about that money. He's not worried about that money, man. And he's a skilled fighter. I don't know that he can beat Fury. That's just my gut feeling. But he's a very skilled fighter. When very skilled fighters, they know how to beat challenges. They know how to, you know, it's going to be interesting, man. This is an interesting fight.
I agree. I think it's a very interesting fight. I myself, from the outside looking in, I think Usyk probably deserved 40%. The 70-30 seems to be a little wide. But again, you know, Fury had leverage. We talked about this for weeks. Usyk's back was up against the wall, and what's he going to do, not fight Fury and fight guys like Hrgović and, you know, Daniel Dubois? He's not going to make a lot of money fighting those guys, nowhere near that, even with only 30% Fury. So
think about this. Think about this. Let this marinate for a minute. Three of the four belts are in the Usyk camp, and he's getting 30% of that cut.
Well, Maestro and I talked about this on Saturday when we were doing shows. People were saying that, and it's a great point. I get it. But let's look at other situations where Oscar De La Hoya fought Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins had all the belts, and De La Hoya only had one, right?
Yeah.
It's and Canelo.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Donnie Lalonde. I mean, I'm sure that was a crazy split as well, you know.
Same thing with, Canelo when he fought Golovkin. Golovkin had all the belts. I mean, so it's not always about the belts. It's about the person that holds the belts.
I hear
it. You know, no disrespect to any of those champions, but, you know, it's all about popularity and who can generate the most revenue. And it's not always about a guy that has the belts can always do that, right?
Yeah. Eve says Fury was trying to price himself out, and they came back to bite him. Possibly, but I mean, again, man,
you could make that argument if you want, but once again, I think Fury knew this guy's got nowhere else to go. I'm going to hem him up.
Yeah, he's right. What is he going to do? He's not going to make that kind of money. He even said it. He says, you know, if you want to go fight somebody else for a million, you know, a couple million. You know, he said you're going to get big money here. What are you going to walk away from that? And he's right. He's right. He's got all the cards.
I agree.
All the cards, man. This one's a big one, too. This is what I'm looking forward to. Devin Haney and Vasyl Lomachenko set for May 20th at the MGM Grand. It's not official yet, but it says they have agreed to terms and are now finalizing the fight at the MGM Grand. I thought for sure that was going to be in New York, but, they're going to have it at the MGM Grand. Crazy, right?
It's a good fight.
That is a heavy fight. I'm going on record right now. Devin Haney is washing Vasyl Lomachenko in this.
Yeah, I think Devin Haney's going to win that fight.
Easy work.
Let me ask you this. Are you more excited about that fight than you are the Garcia-Davis fight?
No, I'm excited about the Garcia-Davis fight.
Yeah, they so
out of all the ones we talked about, even that Tyson Fury fight, I'm excited about that fight. That is the best fight. That's the biggest fight in boxing right now. Hands down.
Now, I know we talked about that earlier. Now, do you think that's the biggest fight globally or just the biggest fight in the United States? Because I think Fury Usyk globally, still a big fight.
No,
Hank
Garcia globally is the biggest fight that can be made right now.
Okay, because I think Fury Usyk could do a million, possibly more than a million pay-per-view buys, maybe 1.5 in the UK, and then maybe do another 200,000 here. Right? And then with that stadium they're going to be fighting in. So in terms of revenue generated worldwide, I would argue that that still would be bigger than the Davis Garcia fight, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
I could still be wrong on that.
Clarissa says that I'd rather see Haney versus Shakur. Haney versus Shakur, I tell you what, and I'll tell you this, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see Haney Shakur. If it happens, that's great, but it's not a fight that I would look forward to. I just don't think
those styles mesh well.
I don't think those styles mesh well at all. I think that's a horrible style matchup for fans and everybody that watches it. I think it's going to be just a defensive show. Not much chances are going to be taken in there. You're not going to see – it's not a good matchup.
I got you.
Just not, man. Just not.
I get it.
Hey, guys, if you're in here, make sure to hit the like button. Make sure to hit the like button and let us know you know, that we're doing a good job, man. Hit that subscribe button also so you guys can get links. Joe does shows throughout the week here, including the roundtable, stuff like that. He does the shows throughout the week, different topics and everything like that. Hit the subscribe button and hit the bell, man. That way we know, you know when a new show is coming up because Joe will go live at the drop of a hat, all right, especially when there's news involved and everything like that, man. So definitely keep it going, all right? And then Triple G has vacated the middleweight title, the WBA middleweight title. Triple G and his team stated that they are not real sure where he goes from here, and he didn't want to kind of hold up the process. Arislandi Lara is now the regular WBA champion, which I'm assuming he's going to be I think they elevated him to the champion.
They're going
to
elevate him. I think they elevated him.
I think they did too. Good what man. Do you make of this for Triple G? Is this it for Triple G? I mean, where does he go from here?
Yeah, I think Triple G, and I guess rightfully so, is just looking for money fights now, and the titles don't mean anything.
But who do you get for a money fight, really?
I don't know.
Charlo would be a money fight,
would
he?
Yeah.
That would be a pay-per-view. I think that would be a money fight. Charlo would be a money fight. I would think the loser of the Caleb Plant Benavidez fight, you know, maybe he can come down and wait or whatever the case. I don't think he has a lot. I really don't think he has a lot left in the tank, man. And, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know where he
could. Do you think he's contemplating retirement at this point?
He should. I don't know if he is, but he should.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the other, the long and short of it. If he's not, he really should be.
I was suspecting what Nacho just said in the chat. He said Golovkin is fighting Munguia next. Watch. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened at all. And they tried to block that fight. Remember when that fight was first going to happen, and the commission blocked it or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
All right, let's go to Phoenix here. 602. Go ahead, Deeb.
One more point. We forgot Chantel Cameron versus Katie Taylor, May 20th.
Oh, give me a break. Nobody cares. You're still on that? Nobody cares. I took that out of the lineup, son. Where you been? Nobody cares about that fight. Katie Taylor and who?
You know all those young girls out there?
Let me tell you this. I'd rather watch Katie Taylor watch a fight than to watch Katie Taylor fight. All right? That's where we're at. That's supposed to be an undisputed, what is that, supposed to be some kind of undisputed championship or something like that?
Undisputed versus undisputed.
Oh, the whole six girls in that division, huh?
Oh, God.
The whole six girls in that division, they're gonna have a round-robin tournament. Two undisputed. Stop it.
Show some respect.
Stop it. Come on.
Please.
What's the matter with you? 602, you're live.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? It's Brandon from Phoenix. How you guys doing, man?
Brandon from Phoenix. What's up, baby?
Brandon, what's up, buddy?
Hey, man, not much, man. Just had some time this weekend to watch a couple fights. But first and foremost, let me just send the condolences to Eric on the passing of your father, man. I know it's tough. This weekend was it was pretty good, man. I liked what I saw in Tim's Wu. I disagree with some of especially with what Maestro said, is that I don't see why would he go up to 160, because to me the biggest fights for him are Wu and Fundora, and I think both of them are winnable fights, but they're tough fights, you know. But there's no big money fight at 160 unless Golovkin wants to fight him, And then I also watched Tony Yoka this weekend, which I don't know, man. It was like the opposite of what I thought I was going to see. I thought I was going to see Takam look slow, sloppy, and lethargic. But Takam had plenty of spring and was, you know, bouncing around the ring, and Tony Yoka looked like he was, like, on damn near 40. So it was just a really confusing thing this weekend. What'd you guys think?
I agree, man. I think you're. I pretty much said a lot of the same things you said about that Yoka fight. I thought he was just a little slow, a little unsure of himself. It just wasn't a great performance at all, I have to say.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I just think that I also agree that when I watched that gold medal fight before, and it was. You know, it was kind of a shady decision. But I thought that the times that I've seen Yoka before, at least before the Bacoli fight, I thought he had a little something going there. But, I mean, I just think he might be one of those people who, you know, just isn't that interested or just isn't – he just doesn't have that desire, you know what I mean, to be great. You know, the best quote I think I've ever heard about the difference between the amateurs and the pros is that the pros is a test of will and the amateurs is a test of skill. You know, and that you really have to have a will for it to beat somebody in an 8, 10, 12-round fight versus where, you know, for a 3-round fight, you just have to have some skill, you know. But yeah, man, that's pretty much it, man. That's all I have for you guys this weekend, man. Keep the show rocking, all right?
All right, man. Thank you so much. Brandon from Phoenix bringing the heat as always. James Burrell in the chat. Beam, I have to address this. I have to take the bait. Katie Taylor versus Cameron is a real fight for the undisputed. What is Tank versus Ryan for an Instagram title? Come on. Come on, son. Stop it. I'm going to ask you a question. Which fight would you rather see? Katie Taylor versus Cameron or Tank versus Ryan?
Lois, I'm sorry. I know you're going to get mad at me for saying this, but I'd rather watch Tank versus Ryan.
Come on. Is that even an – I mean, come on.
I'm sorry.
Please. Come on, James. Come on, man.
I can't lie to the public.
You're better than that. I know you are, man. Stop it. Stop it. What are you doing? 805, you're live. 805.
Hey, guys, what's up? Hey, Eric, Beam.
Nacho, wake up, Nacho. What is it with you? You come on every time with like you're on Quaaludes. Eric has to say 805 three times, Nacho. Three.
Beam, are you really still just like going to keep harping on this? Come on. Like.
Listen, I'm not in the right frame of mind. I just stuck a cream pie in my face. Show me a little empathy.
You've got cream pie right in his face. Right. It was dripping off him, too. It was dripping off. It was nasty, too. He was wiping it off like a sucker, too. Look at him. Hey, Nacho, who would you rather watch? Would you rather watch Katie Taylor versus Cameron fight or whatever, or Chantel or whatever her name is, or Ryan versus Tank?
I mean, honestly, only because I don't know much about her opponent, I'm going to watch Garcia and Tank. I really don't know who the opponent is that Katie Taylor's fighting.
If you had to choose,
I mean, I know
you can only watch one. What are you watching? Stop it. I like how Nacho has to analyze it. Only watching one. You know which one you're watching.
Because he's trying to be politically correct. He doesn't want any backlash. He's a snowflake. Go ahead, Nacho.
I'm not a snowflake.
Come on, man. That was
just because I don't know who the other opponent is, Beebs. Really? Come on.
Yeah, right?
Jeez. You know who Chantel Conrad is. You know.
She was working at Walmart before this, wasn't she?
Whoa! I don't know.
Oh man. This guy.
Well, I heard it was a deep division. Then they have, I heard they got like, you know, they're rolling, you know, 150 deep in that division, right?
Clearly crossing the line, sir.
Yeah, right. That's what they're doing, right? They got a top 40 for men. I don't know what they got for women, though.
Can't say that.
I just did.
That's terrible. Just real quick, you guys brought up, not many people have mentioned it, but you guys brought it up earlier. I just wanted to add a couple of things about the Yoka Takam fight. I just think Yoka never legitimately picked a style in the pros, and him trying to be like a boxer and then trying to be, you know, a puncher and then trying to go back to being a boxer, it just kind of messed him completely all up. And when you watch him fight, he has no identity in the ring whatsoever. And like Beeb said, I just think it's one of those things where he just didn't translate to the pros, and I don't think he's going to get any better at this point. He just is who he is. Now, is he a complete bust in the pros? I mean, I don't know. That remains to be seen, but it's not looking good at this point, having lost two back-to-back fights. So I'd be curious to see if he continues fighting or if he just ends up, you know, kind of fading away. I don't know. We'll see what happens with that.
Hindsight being 2020, Nacho, hindsight being 2020, let me ask you a question. Hindsight being 2020, you know, why did his guys go after Carlos Takam? That seemed like a silly move to me.
I was a little bit surprised myself, to be honest, that they picked Takam because of the fact that if you didn't want to rematch Bacoli, then why would you pick a guy who was just as tough, if not tougher, officially in Takam? That was a strange pick to me. I don't know. That made no sense to me. I really don't understand why they went that route. And it came back to bite him in the butt, you know. He looked terrible last night. I thought Takam completely outfought him and basically just beat him up there. And Yoka looked like a guy who didn't want to be in there. And it was bad. So,
a lot of these guys, man, they get rushed. They have bad matchmaking. A lot of that.
Nacho, how do you think Bacoli does against Takam? Would you pick Bacoli against Takam or no?
Yeah, I would pick Bacoli. I think Bacoli's a better fighter right now at this point than Takam. I think Takam is kind of, you know, towards the end of his career, but he was still way tougher than Yoka was, so he was able to win that fight last night. But I think Bacoli's a lot better than Yoka is at this point, and I'd pick him over Takam if they were to match up. Real quick on the Harrison, I thought Beeb was really good as far as, like, what he said about Tim. Like, he definitely has a lot more wrinkles to his game than his dad did. The biggest thing that I like about him was that he didn't overcommit to any of his shots last night. He kind of let Harrison, you know, try to lead, and he just kind of countered off of what Harrison was trying to do. And he was able to attack the body, and he weakened Harrison as the fight went along. And that fight got really lopsided after pretty much round five. He just took over the fight and just pounded on Harrison. I agree with you guys. That referee should be banned. That was horrible at the end.
Awful.
The fact that he didn't step in and let Tim hit Harrison with at least four or five uppercuts was insane. I was like, what is this guy doing?
Solid uppercuts too. I mean, when you
saw Tony Harrison virtually turn his back away.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, that at that point you're saying to yourself, he's crying out. That's a sign of resignation in itself. He's basically signifying, ref, come in here and help me here. You know?
Yeah, like at that point he was not fighting back and he was just getting teed off on. I don't know what the hell that guy was looking at. And then he had the nerve to actually count and ask him to move from side to side before he stopped the fight.
Yeah.
I was like, good
God.
Do the hokey
pokey. I mean,
awful.
He had him walk one
yeah.
way, then he had him walk the other way. Oh, come on, man.
Yeah, it's like that fight was over.
What did Tony Harrison ever do to that referee? That
I know, right?
Dry like that. Jesus.
He probably put money on Harrison is what he did. He was trying to give him all the benefit of the doubt.
Probably had the over or something.
Yeah, right.
that was awful. That was awful. I hope I never see that guy in a big fight again. Jesus, that was terrible.
Yeah, right?
You probably won't. You probably won't. He's like one of Australia's finest.
Yeah, and with Diego Pacheco, I like the way that kid's been developing. I think he's getting better each and every time that he goes out there. I know some people are kind of throwing out there that he's going to probably end up fighting Berlanga. I mean, at this point, I think he beats Berlanga. I don't think Berlanga's got anything that this kid should be worried about. I think he beats him.
Berlanga wants to fight Canelo now. He wants to fight Canelo now.
Oh my God!
Yeah, that's news. He's over with Golden Boy now, isn't he, Berlanga?
That's insane.
Yeah, I mean that's just. I think Pacheco takes him apart, though. I'd be surprised if Berlanga somehow was to fight anybody with a name, but he's not getting Canelo. I don't care what he says. Canelo's not going to fight that dude, no matter how much he screams it from the mountaintops that he wants him. He's not getting that fight. So, you know,
He's not big enough. Not sure he was brought. All right. Let's see here. Little Penny said the ref was from Thailand. Reffing at the Zoo fight was from Thailand. Hardcore over there, man. They let these guys take a beating.
Well, you have to understand, Tung Po was from Thailand, man, and they fought with those
with the glass, right? That was good.
And they used to fight into the death in Thailand.
You see him kicking at the cement wall?
Yeah, I mean, forget about it.
Tung Po was a monster, man.
Forget about it.
Yeah, Tung Po was the man. Really. Did you hear they're remaking that movie?
Bloodsport? Really?
Yeah, I heard they're remaking it.
Oh,
yeah.
God. Who's going to be in that?
I don't know. Probably Van Damme again.
Oh, God.
Somebody else. I don't know. But I'll be looking forward to that, of course. All right, guys, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Joe Habib on Twitter at jhabib1. Our YouTube channel is ringsidereporterlive.com, and you can find me at ringside73. And, guys, we will see you next week.